In America, you live to work, and in Europe, you work to live.
And this woman goes, I need a gin and tonic. No, she didn't need a gin and tonic. Like, she needs oxygen. She would like a gin and tonic, you know?
We're going to get into so much trouble in this clip. Brits, when it comes to approaching their jobs, they have much more of a go on, I fucking dare you to fire me approach.
You know that Julie doesn't like you. Julie is still going to ask you, hiya, how are you? How's your tea? Do you want tea? And then go talk to Brad and talk shit about you. But in an American office, if Julie doesn't like you, she's never going to speak to you.
Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take challenging problems in working life and business and find out exactly what is going on. And today we're going to be looking at a bit of a transatlantic conflict. We are going to be looking at the biggest differences between working in the US and working in the UK and deciding between us who actually has it best. And let me tell you, I have never seen an internet discussion get so out of hand so quickly. I've never had a two-sided argument with a essentially four sides. And what I mean by that was, when we kind of kicked off the research for this piece, we basically had a group of Brits saying, no, Britain's definitely the best, the UK is definitely the best place to work, and the US saying, no, no, the US is definitely the place to be. But then you also had two other sides where you basically had a bunch of Brits saying, no, no, the UK is absolutely terrible, I really wish I worked in America, and a bunch of US people saying, oh, I'd give anything to not be working in the US. So it was an absolutely fascinating discussion, and what we've done for you is we've narrowed it down to the five biggest differences. We're going to share with you that analysis and work out once and for all who has it best. It's been a lot of fun doing this one, and we've got a really great interview as part of it. Let's get into it. So like I said, not since 1775 have we seen as big an argument between the two countries as this. And look, for transparency, so I've had an office, right? My first business, I had an office in the US and the office in the UK. And even back then when we kind of opened that office up, I remember seeing like a stark difference in regards to how people conduct themselves from a client perspective, employee perspective, partner perspective, whatever it might be. And so the first difference that I wanted to flag is communication. Not just communication, how we talk to each other, our colleagues, but how we talk to our managers, how we talk to our clients, how we talk to our suppliers. It really is so interesting, because what you have to remember is, I think there's an assumption that because everyone speaks English, everyone just kind of conducts themselves in the same way, but it couldn't be more different. And this clip summarizes really nicely the main difference between communication between Brits and the US, starting with his interpretation of how Brits conduct themselves in the workplace. Check it out.
So if you're in the office and you know that Julie doesn't like you, Julie is still going to ask you, hiya, how are you? How's your tea? Do you want tea? And then go talk to Brad and talk shit about you. But in an American office, if Julie doesn't like you, she's never going to speak to you. You don't have to wonder how she feels about you. You know. She'll speak to you professionally, but she's not going to ask you anything personal because she genuinely doesn't care, so you don't have to wonder. So compared to our British counterparts, Americans don't adhere to those social kind etiquettes as well. And so we say things that are just a little too straightforward.
What I'm very aware, by the way, before conducting this piece, I'm really trying to avoid stereotypes. Like, I genuinely am. It's not my intention. That's not the purpose of the piece, but there's no way I'm going to be avoiding that trap. But he's absolutely right. There's a real honesty to the way Americans talk and work, in the sense of it's very obvious if they like you, and there's very obvious if they dislike you. Even to the extent, like, I've had a recent experience of that, right? So my book's coming out, and basically I've got a UK publisher to kind of handle the UK side of things, and I've got a US publisher to handle the US side of things. And like, they've both been utterly amazing, but the difference with which they talk about the book is just so America's like, oh my god, I just really connected with the words, like it was so amazing and I absolutely love it. It's so like heartfelt and it's absolutely wonderful. So I love the honesty of the US, but at the same time it's very obvious if someone in the US does not think particularly well of you, and they will very much tell you to the face. But it's an honesty to it I really like, because what you have to understand about us Brits, right, is basically everyone over the age of about 32 in Britain is sort of emotionally suppressed, and so you end up in this situation where you basically treat your worst enemy and your best friend in the world exactly the same way. There's like an icy Edwardian sort of politeness that we apply to everything that we talk about, and you just never break that rank, right? Even if you're up against like the I've been in like legal cases in Britain and everyone is still so polite to each other. It's absolutely weird. And I've also dealt with American lawyers who are ferociously aggressive. So it's such an interesting way in regards to kind of how people talk and how people interact, because, you know, US sort of are very unapologetic when they come and say, hey, we're going to be doing business or what? And by the way, I'm going to try and sort of tone down the accents a little bit for this. But for me, like, the communication style is absolutely one of the key biggest differences when it comes to the two different nations. The next biggest difference is more around benefits and salary, the kind of nuts and bolts of having a job. So firstly, when it comes to salary, on average, salaries in the US can be anywhere from 25 to 50% higher than in the UK, depending on the industry and specific job roles. So basically, if you're in the US, you're likely to be earning a lot more money than if you're in the UK for comparative roles, basically, is the way to think about it. That is significantly offset by the fact that the cost of living in the US tends to be a lot more expensive. In certain cases, by the way, in other areas, it's perhaps not so much. But generally speaking, standard of living is a lot better in the US on an average basis compared to that of the UK. So whilst the difference is not quite as much as the salary suggests due to the fact that things tend to be more expensive, it very much is the case that if you're in the US, you are more likely to earn more and you probably more have a little bit more of a net worth compared to the UK counterparts. And so salary-wise, the US certainly seem to be winning. But then we get to the benefits side of things, and this is where things fall apart for the US pretty quickly. And the big one, the one thing that comes up more than anything else, is healthcare. And this is where, like, the working culture becomes so different, because healthcare insurance is not a perk that UK offer that often. They might offer like bits, they might offer like gym memberships, or they might offer like dentistry or stuff like that. But as a general rule, like, private healthcare is something actually mostly US firms in the UK offer. It's not a kind of standard offering that people have here in the UK. And the main reason for that is because we have the NHS, right? We have free healthcare. That's something we all kind of pay for as part of our taxes. And it's something most people in the country are really proud of. And it's a biggest employer of the in the country. We've got, everyone's got sort of friends and family work there. It's definitely struggling at the moment. But broadly speaking, everyone's it's a really sort of proud institution in our country. The US is a very, very different story. And look, when it comes to the US healthcare situation, right, I've been an entrepreneur for 12 years. I've run multiple companies. I back myself to loosely understand most industries and have a sort of working knowledge in regards to why companies do what they do, why things are set up in the way they have. I do not have a fucking clue how the US healthcare works or why it is set up the way it is. Nothing about this industry makes sense. The idea that you are allowed to just hide your prices and then the prices are different for different people depending on what you have, and then the sort of lack of transparency in regards to you don't even get told, nothing gets covered, until nothing about this industry makes sense. I do not understand how it has been allowed to sort of morph into the way it has. It is so, so weird. I just cannot get my head around it. It's one of the most illogical industries I have ever heard of, and I can totally see how there are some people in the middle making absolute bang for it, because the lack of transparency around anything, and I'm not going to go into all the ins and outs of it, okay, because I'd be here for absolutely hours, but nothing about this makes sense. And I can totally see why in the US it's one of the biggest complaints, because the more I look into it, the less it makes sense. And I think the reason I say that, right, is often, like, so when we had our US office before we sold the company, we would obviously have to kind of give private healthcare for our team. And that was a huge additional expense, right? Bear in mind, we're already increasing our salaries and we're a UK business funding the US. You also had to give private healthcare, absolutely. And that's an additional about 50% cost of the business in regards to on top of the salary. And it's just such a sort of strange sort of, as a Brit sort of looking across the water, it is such a strange setup in regards to how the US have it working. And so I absolutely am going to give, from a salary perspective, the US are definitely going to win. But from a benefits perspective, just simply because of healthcare, the UK is coming out flying, because the US, I'm sorry, I love you dearly, but nothing about that makes sense whatsoever to me. Which brings us on to difference number three, PTO and annual leave. And the fundamental difference between the two countries on this particular topic was beautifully summarized by this UK employee talking about her boss in the US in this Reddit thread. And it basically said this: my American boss doesn't like how much holiday I'm taking and has reported me to HR. And you go, oh, okay. And you see that title and you say, well, okay, I assume that she's probably taken more hot days than she's meant to. And then you look into it and you say, the employee has taken 11 days of vacation in 2025, well within her allowance. However, her new boss, unfamiliar with European labour laws, raised concern and escalated the matter to HR. The boss, based in the US, reportedly considered the time off excessive and insisted on a formal discussion about it upon her return. And all she'd done is taken 11 days off in 2025. Like, that's it. Like, most workers who work a 5-day week must receive by law in the UK at least 28 days paid annual leave. And in Brits, we very much take those, and quite right too. And I think this is where the US come in. Basically, and again, obviously, I'm not a US, and this is where I try and avoid cliches in a lot of of ways. But as far as I can work out, guilt-free, the US, you can take Thanksgiving off, you can take Christmas, you can celebrate the 4th of July, and then you can basically get a sneaky few days in the summer, if you're lucky, providing you take about 3 work phones or online for most of the time. That's basically your entire holiday. And look, I'm saying this as an entrepreneur, as someone who really wants to drive productivity, drive my business forward, make as much revenue as possible. Your team need that time off. If they're working hard, no one can go flat out for a year. And if they say they can, they're not operating at the kind of maximum productivity when they are actually on it, if that makes... Do you see what I mean? In the sense of, if someone has kind of rode back... Basically, you could probably go at 50, 60% all year round. My personal view is much better to go 70 to 80% and then get a proper week or two off every sort of 3 months or so. Like, that's just, for me, that is how I see productivity growing. That's how you see have a motivated team and all these different things. So number 4 on the difference list is the idea around job security and quitting. And this personally was the biggest surprise to me, because I'll never forget when we first hired our first ever US employee and we had our big US firm do our big US contracts, and it was all super, super exciting. But I'll never forget just seeing what was written in the notice period, because there just wasn't one. And this is a huge difference between the two nations, because what you have to understand about the UK is we just have a notice period. So the idea behind it is usually a month. You finish your probation period and you move on to a proper notice period. Like I said, usually a month. Sometimes it could be 3. Sometimes it could even be 6, which I think is way, way too long for reasons I'll come on to. But basically, the principle behind it is if you hand in your notice and quit the job, you still have to work for the employer for another month. And equally, if you're fired or made redundant or something like that, then you actually get an extra month's salary. You don't just sort of leave on that day. And the reason behind it makes complete sense, right? It's security. So as the employer, if someone quits, I need a bit of time to find your replacement. And the reason why that's important is you don't have to sort of offload all the work to other people and cause them unnecessary stress. It gives you a bit more time to get your ducks in a row. Equally, if you're fired, it gives you that month extra salary to make sure that you can go and find another job and hopefully don't make you sort of eat into savings, you know, because a lot of people, you know, are living very close to the margin. So for me, it makes complete sense to have it. I know, by the way, I know working a notice is a pain in the ass. Like, I really do get that. But I do think that overall, the pros massively outweigh the cons, which brings us to the good old United States of America, because you just don't have one. So this quote summarizes it nicely. It is generally customary for an employee and an employer in the US to give at least 2 weeks notice before terminating their contract to not damage the relationship, but it's not required. So basically, it's sort of like a, you know, an agreement, sort of the social thing to do, right? Where you can basically say, look, I'm quitting, but I'll do you a solid and do the extra 2 weeks. And it just blows my mind that that's the setup, because it's so obviously can just be someone can turn around and say, absolutely not. And this clip from TikTok summarizes the situation nicely.
Deb, can I help you?
Hi, this is Katie. I was just calling to let you know that I am not coming in tonight or ever. I decided that I don't want to work for someone who is accusing me of lying about my grandpa's death. I just want to let you know that you don't really know me or anything going on about my chaotic life, and you threatened my job over the phone when he literally passed yesterday. So I'd rather not pay my rent than work for someone like you. And don't worry, I will send you a copy of his obituary in the mail as soon as we get it written. So I quit. Bye, Deborah.
I mean, look, a couple of thoughts spring to mind on this clip, because obviously the boss here was absolutely atrocious. Firstly, what are you doing accusing someone of saying their relative has died? Like, it's such an easy thing to prove to the negative. So I just don't even know why you would even make that accusation. So straight away, not okay. Secondly, how has it ramped up so much? The poor guy passed away yesterday and we're already at that level. So the boss has given it no time to go from zero to absolute 100 just on the general arsery scale. So I just don't understand how they've arrived at that. And like, they've quit now. So was that your goal? Was that your intention? Well done. You've now got to go find the replacement. So shocking management straight off the bat. Let's make that very clear. But like, it does show the point, right? This idea of these really dramatic quits is a much more of an America thing than the UK thing. And the fundamental reason why that is because of the notice period. Because it's all very well saying, sticking two fingers up, telling the boss to go F themselves and walking off into the sunset. But that becomes a lot more awkward when you then have to sit down at your desk and work for another 4 weeks for them. So I think the sort of attitude towards quitting is a much much sort of bolshier approach in the US, but also this idea around not having notice periods sort of baked into contracts and stuff like that is absolutely wild. And I have to say, I'm not comfortable with it at all. I think overall it makes complete sense. Because bear in mind, right, no one benefits if loads of people run out of money. Like, no one benefits. So the idea that, you know, if you do have to go through that awful process of letting a team go or making someone redundant or firing someone, you want to at least give them that security to give them a chance to get back on their feet, because no one benefits in society if everyone is struggling to find work and everyone's struggling for money. So I do think that's important to recognise. And then the final one, and this is probably my favourite, is the idea behind work ethic and attitude, specifically towards work-life balance, I guess, but actually talking about work in general as well. The quote that summarises what I think the main difference is between the UK and America is this: in America you live to work, and in Europe you work to live. Now, this is quite a famous line that's sort of quoted quite a lot, but it's quoted quite a lot for a reason, right? And I do think it kind of hits the nose in regards to the US approach to work. It very much takes center stage, whereas I think in the UK it often does take center stage, but I do think they're much more willing to say, right, that's not going to be my absolute priority. I'm going to focus on my family, or I'm going to focus on hobbies, or I'm going to focus on other parts of my life or something like that. Whereas in America, I think there's less, I don't want to say willingness to do that, because I think where we've got to be careful is a lot of people in America probably would love to prioritise work-life balance a little bit more, but I think the culture of their work over there makes it a lot trickier to do so. So for me, the biggest difference when it comes to attitude towards work with the US and the UK, from all the things that I've observed over the years, is this. And I'm going to caveat what I'm about to say with this. If I was to rank the most confident people in the world that I've ever met, the list would be dominated by Americans. Americans have such a sort of self-confidence, which I truly admire and massively enjoy. And it's one of the reasons I have so much affection for so many Americans. However, when it comes to work, one of the biggest reasons why US workers don't take time off is there a genuine sort of fear of being seen as replaceable or missing out on an opportunity. And I think it's almost like a cadet branch of the American dream. And what I mean by that is, I think Americans fear not being present. So if they take a week off, they might be thinking, oh, what's going to happen to my career? What happens with this? What happens if this person gets that opportunity and does better than me, and all that sort of stuff? So Americans, I think, deep down would love to take a little bit more time off, or actually quite publicly would love to take a bit more time off. But because they prioritize their career so much, and because there's that fear of being replaceable, which I think in fairness, a lot of American culture shows that most people are very much replaceable, I do think that's kind of baked into why people don't prioritize work-life balance so much, don't take as much annual leave and things like that. And this is why I think Brits differ significantly when it comes to Americans, because Brits, when it comes to approaching their jobs, they have much more of a go on, I fucking dare you to fire me approach. I challenge you to find someone else who put up with as much shit as I do on a daily basis for as shitty pay as you give me. I challenge you, go on, here is my card, go out and find someone who's going to put up with as much nonsense as I do. And that tends to be the approach, and that's why I think Brits happily say, I am going to be taking every single day of annual leave that I can. I'm going to make sure that I'm leaving sensible hours. Yes, I'm hardworking. Yes, I'm happy to put in a shift, but go on, I bloody dare you to test me. Go on, I really do. And I absolutely love that attitude that we bring to it, because it's very admirable in a lot of ways, and I'm fully on board with that kind of approach. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't going mad and decided to sit down to talk to someone else about some of these theories to see if I was barking up the wrong tree or not. And so I was delighted to be able to sit down with Quint Boer, son of actor Bruce Boer. Quint has an unbelievably successful agency with offices in LA, New York, London, and many more, and alongside that he's a practicing psychotherapist, has a real understanding of the emotional triggers around why people work what they do, how different cultures work together, and everything in between. And it was an absolutely brilliant interview, and this is how it went.
First of all, I want to start this entire podcast by saying that we're putting caveats everywhere. This is my experience working in New York, my experience working in London, and my experience working in Los Angeles and in Amsterdam. I don't know what it's like in Miami. I don't know what it's like in Minnesota, because I think there are some certain mindsets that happen in New York and in Los Angeles that are discrete to those areas and the people who choose to work there. Don't forget, a lot of people go from outside into those cities and they're hustling. So, I mean, broad brushstrokes, I would say that the work-life balance, if we can imagine a spectrum between, you know, play and work, in America, they move that slider right the way over to work. If you go out drinking with colleagues in an American situation, you're in the bar and you will probably be talking about work. Whereas I think if you and I were to go out, we would be probably talking about politics, cultural stuff.
So
cultural stuff, Ben. Of course, we're talking about cultural
stuff. Cultural stuff. Yes, that goes without saying. So you just think work is just a bigger part of Americans' lives, basically, compared to say in the UK.
It absolutely is. They are 110% focused on work. Now, I want to just put some context around that, because that's not necessarily a good thing. I think that a lot of the times, not just me, and there's a lot of data to back this up, but if you are so full on at work and you're so committed, of course, you got a family, that's going to take a hit. You got a relationship with your wife or with your husband and with your kids, then you are going to be, you know, that relationship will pay the price for your commitment to work. Now, in the UK, I think it's a lot more balanced.
Yeah.
And I think there's an understanding and, dare I say it, maybe an emotional intelligence around it, where they understand, look, if I don't have this other part, if I don't have that balance, then I'm going to be, I'm going to compromise my life, my quality of life in total. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. And I guess the question I would ask is, do you think, so the American attitude, I actually really agree with your interpretation of like how they approach work. Do you think that's a cultural thing for Americans, or do you think it's more how American companies are set up in regards to that's just the demand and people kind of have to go with it or risk sort of falling behind or not doing as well as they'd like?
If I'm talking about New York and Los Angeles, then a lot of those people who've come into the city to work. So they are making a life change and they want to come to the bright lights of the big city and make success of it in New York, to coin a Frank Sinatra song. Now, in doing that, they're making a commitment, body and soul, to make a go of it. They're going to be there. They're going to be paying $10 for an Americano, and they're going to be paying
which tastes terrible, by the way. Honestly, it's one of my biggest complaints is American coffee, and they're really proud of it. And I love Americans. We're very grateful to get a lot of viewers on this show from America. But I do not understand why they think they do a good cup of coffee. It blows my mind.
No, and especially with all the heritage there with Italians and all the rest of it. Why? I don't know. But the staff we have who go there, who arrived in New York, they really want to make a go of it, and they are head down, pushing the whole way. In the UK, we have the same thing in London, or because people are working from home, and we maybe touch on that in a bit. So when I say working from home, we have staff, you know, as far away as Bristol, Bath, Devon. And of course, in continental Europe as well, in Trieste, in Bucharest, and other places. And their attitude is just as professional, and they get as much done, but perhaps they're just a little bit more kicked back with it. They lend more weight to their personal relationships and their marital relationships and their relationships with their kids, as opposed to Americans who are far more work oriented.
So yeah. I mean, yeah, I agree. I think my view of it is, I think the UK gives people more options, if I'm being honest. And I think, like, in all of our lives, right, your career is a very long time. I think people often forget, and it's getting longer as sort of retirement age tends to be sort of heading in the wrong direction for a lot of people. But in my view, like, there's absolutely times where in your life where you go, right, these next 2, 3, 4 years is all going to be about my career. It's going to be about what I want to achieve. It's what my personal goals in regards to my work, my job, whatever it might be. Yeah. And the UK is absolutely set up to kind of help support that. And America, but I do feel like, and that's great. But obviously, I think when America comes along, it's like, right, you have to do this whether you want to or not. There's like an expectation from certain companies. Whereas for the UK, I think I do feel like we're in a culture where we're a little bit more forgiving than perhaps in the US. And that can't be a bad thing in my view. Like in the long run, in the sense of just having people enjoying work for longer, that doesn't feel like the worst setup for me.
The elephant in the room here, and let's grab it, is that the system is set up in America in a very different way. So let's look at employment law. I mean, you in theory can get an employee and just say, look, we're really not happy with what you've just done now. Go and get a brown box and give me a thumb drive and see you later. That's it. They go. Whereas over here, much more protracted process, obviously written warnings and
And just notice periods. Honestly, when we first opened up our US office, one of the, because we kind of, you kind of have, you know, your lawyer's job, your sort of standard contract. And we looked at this contract and we thought, and we were so naive, we just didn't realize that was how American Trump counts. So we just like, absolutely not. We'll just bring our UK ones over. And everyone thought we had the greatest benefits package ever. And it's just like, no, like, we're just going to give people proper notice periods. We're going to give people proper annual leave. You have to take it. Like, the annual leave thing in the US blows my mind. I really find it surprising.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that goes through. So, I don't know what your company policy is, but as a rule, you know, an English employee has 10 bank holidays, including Boxing Day and Christmas, whereas the Americans have 8. And we, as a company, give 21 days standard as a holiday, but the average is 10 days.
It's so wild.
If you want to go on a 2-week vacation, forget it, baby. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why.
And even if you do sort of snaffle that, the expectation of you to be available on your phone is kind of... And like the UK, there are certain examples of that for sure. And I think some people do check in because they like to. But the US expectation is wild in that sense as well.
Yeah. But if you think about what that's going to do to the mindset of somebody who's working, and we haven't even touched on medical, right?
Yes.
So dentistry, eyes, paternity leave, maternity leave.
Yeah.
You're going to be far more focused.
I totally agree. And so in regards to like communication and like attitude and things like that,
yeah.
What are your thoughts? I find I love my country more than anything in the world, right? But one of the things I've always deeply admired in the US over the UK is everyone in the US fundamentally believes they're going to be the next big thing and the next great success. And I absolutely love that attitude. I think UK, there's almost like our sort of default culture is just be like, icily sort of polite and not very showy-offy and not very sort of we're not a great bragging nation at all. In fact, I'd say we're one of the worst bragging nations in the world. But America, they all absolutely, they're so unapologetically ambitious and up for it and think they're going to succeed. And it's something I absolutely love about America. Do you have a similar view?
I have, Benjamin. Let's unpack this. I mean, look who we've got for President of the United States. I mean, he's absolutely full bore, you know, self-promotion, narcissistic, and he has sort of taken that idea to the extreme.
Mm.
The text on our website, we use, when we first opened up in the United States in 2018, the text on the website, so we just did a copy and paste onto the website in the United States. It was a little like, oh, we're really rather good at making video and animation. Oh, you know, you may want to give us a try.
Please, sir, pick us.
Oh, yes, please. Oh, up now, you know, yeah, would you mind?
Sorry to bother you, but we're really rather good at this.
We're really rather good, you know. And this sort of, it's demure, but it's actual, isn't it? We're not playing at it. We actually feel, you know, we're sort of, I mean, Stephen Fry called us emotionally constipated as a nation. Mm. I mean,
stiff upper lip and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And whereas the American staff went, Ed, to my earlier point, if that cuts, that they are, thinking about the strategy of the company. So after the website was published in America, the phone starts ringing. It's like, oh, you know, you're saying that you're really rather good. Can we just change that to we're the fucking dog's bollocks?
Because we are the greatest in the world.
We're the greatest. Yeah, we're the greatest.
No data to back it up, but we are the best.
The world. Yeah, yeah. It's the first time it's ever been done. We're going to do video and animation. It's going to be great, you know. And it's like, yeah, you're right. Mm. Probably we should. And the other thing is that, you know, if you take I guess it sums up an anecdote that we're sitting on an aisle seat on a plane the other day going over there. And this woman goes, I need a gin and tonic. I need a gin and tonic. I'm thinking, you cheeky mare, you know, I need a gin. What's that? And it's like, no, she didn't need a gin and tonic. Like, she needs oxygen. She would like a gin and tonic, you know? And it's those phrases. Do you find that, Ben?
It's. I think there's something... And we're going to get into so much trouble in this clip. Nothing carries like an American accent in the sense of if you're in a crowded space or if you're in a sort of public area or whatever it might be. And they are not talking loudly, but there's something about the American accent that just pierces through any sort of conversation. And it's slightly amazing. And I have a lot of admiration for it because I have no idea how that works. I think for me, like, the thing that summarized doing business in America more than anything else was an experience I had in New York. And we met this person and, you know, it wasn't sort of gelling at all. But eventually he kind of stood up and he said, "Ben, I don't like you." So I'm gonna try to do the accent. Ben, I'm not gonna do the accent. "Ben, I don't like you, but I want your money, so we're gonna do business together." And then he just held out his hand. And I respect that so much, because if he'd been British, if he'd been from the UK, I would never have known he did. Like, he would have been polite to me for the rest of time, and I would have gone to my grave thinking he's one of my good friends, sort of thing. Because there is just that, they just wear their hearts on their sleeve, and it comes across in the way they do business as well, which is, in a lot of ways, a lot more honest than the UK, because they're not afraid to hide their feelings, and like bringing the emotion into the negotiation and into the discussions is actually really part of it. Whereas in the UK, like, any sort of emotion is just sort of crystallizing like a sort of sign of weakness. I'm not saying that's a healthy approach at all, but it certainly is for me.
Can I tell a personal anecdote?
Yeah, please do.
I know that's why I like the working because we can get personal, and I'm just going to totally hijack this conversation and tell you a personal anecdote. My father was a man called Bruce Boer, who was an American actor.
Mm.
And one of the things that he, in the 70s, so he's a physically large American, but he would play these bombastic Americans. So he was the American general in Octopussy. He was a rebel commander in
Empire Strikes Back.
But he was the American who wanted a Waldorf salad in Fawlty Towers. Apple, celery, walnuts, grapes. Let me talk to the chef. Yeah, so he was playing that stereotype that you just mentioned. I mean, that's the caricature which we've got of Americans.
Mm.
But it's still there, distilled down in your, the guy who said, "I don't like you, Ben, but I'm going to take your money."
"I don't like you, Ben, but I want your money, so let's do business together." It's the phrase I'll always remember. And do you know what? It's one of my, if I sort of had to list my top favorite meetings I've had in my career, that's one of them. It's just one of those moments that you just think that's absolutely outstanding. I think stature matters more in America. I think when I look at things like boardrooms and I look at job titles and I look at everything's hyped up in America more in the UK, like vice presidents. I always make jokes about being everyone's a vice president in the US, right? And it's basically just a sort of standard role. But vice president, you just thought, meet the vice president, that sounds, you know, quite. And so there's a sort of state trap. But actually, when you look at how many vice presidents there are, just everyone seems to be that. And like boardrooms are really set up to impress perhaps a little bit more and have that more sort of showmanship, I guess, towards how they approach it. I guess it's, again, it's kind of similar. It's like that slightly more showing off culture, which the UK, if we're really bad at in the UK. I would like us to be a little bit more. You know, there's a sort of, we put on this sort of forced modesty sometimes, I think, in the UK, which probably sets us back a little bit on occasion.
And we, I mean, if you're doing business internationally, which a lot of us do, then you have to be aware of those cultural sensitivities and take them into account.
Because jokes land really poorly in the US.
They don't do banter. Americans don't do banter in the office.
They don't do banter. The sarcasm. Again, like I feel a bit guilty about this, because you end up sort of talking about stereotypes a little bit. And but like, my God, do jokes not land in the US? Like, for me, and look, it could just be that I'm not as funny as I think I am, and I'm going to really own that as a possibility. But you're in board meetings, and you sort of try and break the ice, or you make a funny joke, or you sort of make a funny comment just to kind of lighten the mood. It is for a culture which is, they're obviously quite a loud, you know, approach to everything. It is stony silence. Nothing is quiet. For all those jokes about Americans being loud, nothing is quieter than a joke that's not landed in a US boardroom, because, word, does time stand still at that point? And everyone just looks at you and you go, I've misjudged this significantly.
Yeah, you didn't read the room right.
Crickets, tumbleweed, all of that. Quentin, I appreciate you so much for taking the time to speak to me. It's been a really fun conversation, and one we should definitely do again, because that was really good. Thank you so much for joining me on this. Thank you so much for watching. Please do give it a like and comment. It makes a huge difference to the reach of the video, and I will see you all next week.